Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Mystery coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear the case of the solitary cyclist on Sherlock Holmes. But right now, it's Natalie Masters as Candy Matson from July 7th, 1949 on ABC. It's the episode called Murder on a Cable Car.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Do you have a little unsolved murder in your home? Got some blackmail you want to unload? Are you the victim of some vulgar extortionist? I know a girl you should meet. She may not be the greatest private eye in the world, so what if it does cost you $300 or $400? She sure is sweet. She's Candy Matson. Like to meet her?
Hello.
Candy Matson?
Well, I wasn't sure when I looked in the mirror this morning.
Had a rough night, eh?
Oh, there have been rougher ones. Look, Voice, before you get caught with my receiver down, who are you and what do you want?
As to who I am, you'll find out very shortly. What I want is you.
How romantic, and over the phone yet.
Let me finish. What I want is you to lay off that cable car business.
Oh, that? Well, I'm afraid I can't. You see, I was sitting beside him when they discovered his transfer had been punched, sort of permanently. That's how things happen with me. I get into the craziest routines. You see, I used to be a model. I've been told I have the proper displacement for such a career. But I found there wasn't enough money in it. A girl has to maintain a nice apartment on Telegraph Hill, keep enough clothes to highlight the displacement I mentioned, and also eat, doesn't she? Sure. So I turn private eye. You meet a better class of people, mostly named Rigor or Mortis. Now take this cable car deal. It's positively fantastic. But after all, this is radio, isn't it? Like to hear how the whole thing happened? Leave us trip along to Act One. I wanted to get downtown that morning, but I couldn't take the F car on Stockton. They were ripping up about 87 streets, which is par for the course. So I walked down Telegraph Hill and up to Mason. That's where the Bay and Powell cable car stops.
All aboard! Come on, Lana, show that shapely ankle. We gotta make the Fairmont by Whitsuntide.
The car was loaded, and so was the character next to me. I tried to budge into the seat between him and a fisherman's wharf dowager, but I couldn't quite make it. I'd forgotten my shoehorn. Say, pardon me, but would you mind reading your Wall Street Journal over that-a-way a bit? I'd like to sit in here.
Oh, if you insist.
A knight of old. He budged his hips a quarter of an inch, and I slipped in, ready for my rocket ride over the hill and down into town. The trip, as usual, was uneventful. Three smashed fenders and several choice words I'd never heard before, but I wrote them down. By the time our prairie schooner reached the turntable at Market Street, the crowd on the car had thinned out. But Buster was still beside me, his head buried in common and preferred.
Market Street!
I started to get down.
Hey, lady, take your boyfriend with you. We're heading back up the hill.
Boyfriend? I'll sue. He looks like the advance man for Lewis and Clark.
How do you like that? He fell asleep over his stocks and bonds.
I looked again. Hipsy wasn't asleep. Hipsy was stone cold dead on Market. What a twist. I, who always went on the prowl for a whodunit, get one literally tossed into my lap. He just hadn't gone out of this world serene-like. Oh, no. There was a steady slurp-slurp of blood trickling down his vest just north by northeast of the equator. After a half-hour wait full of questioning by homicide legged men, I knew my morning shopping tour was rained out. And after all, I was only going to buy an emerald clip to match the glint in my eye. Well, that would have to wait. I knew the next step. I grabbed a cab home. I wasn't long in waiting. Right on cue. And if it was the right cue, it would be Lieutenant Ray Mallard from headquarters, daintily pressing his cuticles against my apartment buzzer. I was right.
What?
I've been expecting you. Come on in, Mallard.
You've been expecting me.
Why, Candy?
Naive little Rover boy, you. Have a drink?
No, no, I'm not in the mood. Just make it a double.
Sit down, Mellard. Let's be civilized. Take off your hat.
It is off.
Oh?
Candy, for once I'm puzzled.
You're just saying that.
Yeah, because it's true. I've checked and rechecked. No matter how many loose ends I tie together, I still get no connection between you and Dwight Ellsworth.
Dwight Whosworth?
Ellsworth, your extremely limp traveling companion on the cable this morning.
Mallard, I can give you an angle on that.
Yeah?
Yeah. The angle being that I didn't know him from Adam.
Level?
Straight. Oh, look, honey pot, this mediocre dialogue is getting us nowhere. What did you haul your size 11s in here for?
Oh, frankly, I don't know. Here, fill it up, will you?
Well, you're not just going around in circles, Mallard. You're going around in doubles.
Yeah, yeah. Like I've said before, Candy, you've got a pretty view from here.
Oh? Wait till I turn around.
I mean from your window. Look at that ship down there, just docking.
Hmm? Where?
Down there. There's romance for you. Probably just in from the Far East.
Here's your drink.
Oh, thanks.
You know, it is sort of romantic. Don't you think it'd be fun to jump on a tramp like that and whisk off to the South Seas?
Hmm?
On a honeymoon?
No.
That's what I thought. South Seas. Mallard.
Don't call me Mallard.
Why not? We're just playing for ducks, aren't we?
Very crisp. Playing for ducks. No, Candy, we aren't. Not in this case. We've got a dead man in our hands. Rudy Toot Toot shot right through the heart. And you were sitting next to him.
Sure, sure. Go on now. Get out of here.
What?
You heard me. Lift your hindquarters and get back to headquarters.
Candy, I don't like that look. You've got something on your mind.
Yeah, yeah, but you wouldn't recognize it if I told you about it.
One word of warning. Don't dabble. You're in deep enough. Got it?
Got it. Here's your hat. Grab it. So long, Mellard. See you around a jailhouse sometime. Fi-fo-fum. 'Twas then I smelled a big fat fee. That great, big, kind of attractive Mallard. He missed the boat. Oh, he saw it, but he missed it. It was that ship he saw docking. That was the first time I came out of the dark since my Toonerville ride down the hill in the morning. I needed help, so I called an old friend of mine, if you can call that help. Rembrandt Watson was his name. He was a photographer and other things. He spent most of his life in the dark room dabbling with bottles. His negatives and prints were sharp. His thought processes, not quite. But he'd given me assistance in the past, so I called him.
Rembrandt Watson speaking. Photography, portraits, and camera work.
Yes, Rembrandt, I know.
Also available for gardening, janitorial service, and babysitting.
Rembrandt, it's Candy.
Especially if they're over 21. Who? Candy?
Now you're tuned in.
How dare you, baggage. I was experimenting with a new type of formula.
90 proof for 100.
100. And Candy, it works beautifully. There's a delightful little pixie in a pink ballet skirt in my living room.
Well, leave her there and get over here immediately to my place. Take a cab. I'll pay for
it. I'd much rather have a handsome carriage with a brace of chestnuts.
You've got them in your head. Now just do as I say and get over here. Float in, Rembrandt.
Gadfrey. Where's the man to take me cloak, gloves, and topper?
You're wearing a sport coat and slacks, and you know I have no man.
And therein lies your basic trouble, my dear. You have no man.
Now, Rembrandt.
Every man should have a woman. Every woman should have a man. It's the incontrovertible law of the universe. Candy, you should have a man.
You?
Sure. I'm no longer a man. I'm a sprite, transcending the world.
Well,
and
stop transcending a moment and come down to earth. We've got a job to do.
How poetic. How idyllic. We've got a job to do. For money?
Eventually.
Oh, one of those. Very well, my dear. Bring me up to date.
Well, I don't really know if I can or not.
Good. Then I shall leave and return to me formula.
Oh, no. What I mean is, the whole story is so fantastic you'd never believe it.
I might. Try me, Candy.
Well, I get on a cable car and sit next to a character reading the Wall Street Journal.
A strange coupling. A cable car and the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. And when we get to the end of the line, my friend next to me is dead.
Probably the ride down the hill frightened him to death.
Uh-uh. He looked like a used punch board. He had a neat little bullet hole through his heart.
Candy, my little ballerina friend in the pink skirt is more believable than what you just told me.
I told you it was fantastic, but none of how it happened. Now, sooner or later, Mallard is going to come out of his fog. And when he does, I'm going to be out of a fee.
A fee that so far doesn't exist, my pretty.
It will, if my hunch is right. Now, here's what I want you to do. Go down to the Chronicle and get all the back files you can on Southern Island Steamship Company.
The Chronicle? A pleasure. I have a few questionable companions there who indulge in formulas.
Stay away from those companions and just do as I ask.
Very well, my dove. I go, but entirely against my will. And where will you be?
Around town, Rembrandt. I've got to do some legwork.
Let me assure you, Candy, you have just the right equipment for it, too.
What a joint. I'll bet they mount slit gullets on the walls instead of deer heads. Well, come on, Candy. Get your tools out and screw up your courage.
Yeah, miss, what'll it be?
Nothing right at the moment except information.
Information, water, both free. What do you want to know?
Well, I'm looking for the purser off the Dwightsonia. I hear he does his shore duty in here.
That's right. Name Campbell. That head on the table over there belongs to him.
Thanks. Hello, sailor. Hey, Campbell. Wake up.
Leave me alone.
Come on, snap out of it.
Who are you? What do you want?
My name is Candy Matson. I want to ask a question.
I'm only drinking. Go away.
Not until I find out what I want to know. Dwight Ellsworth was murdered this morning.
What?
I thought that would bring you to.
Well, that's the nicest news I've heard since VJ Day. What do you want to know?
Where does his brother live?
That stooge. He's got about as much spine as a water eel.
Never mind. I want to find him. He seems to keep his whereabouts as secret as an atomic stockpile.
The whole family ought to be knocked off. He lives out in Seacliff, 25 Dashiell Road.
Good. Bartender, buy my friend a little reward, and one for yourself, too. Well, so far, so good. Oh, how did I know about Campbell the purser? Well, you see, I have quite a few friends, most of whom my pal Mallard doesn't approve. So I grabbed a cab and navigated the driver out toward Seacliff. There it was, 25 Dashiell Road. An austere-looking cabana. One that dared you to ring the front doorbell. I dared. I had the awful feeling I should have been around at the side door delivering hand laundry.
Good evening.
Well, except for the fog, yes. Is Mr. Ellsworth in?
Yes, he is. But I'm afraid I must ask you to leave. There's been a death in the family.
I know. That's why I'm here.
Come in, please.
Thank you. This old gal was really something. She couldn't have been more than 45, yet looked like something out of the Barretts of Wimpole Street. She ushered me into a large-ceilinged living room, and there on the divan was my boy, his head lowered into his hands and quite obviously touched.
Roger, this young lady is here to see you. I don't believe you mentioned your name.
Candy Matson.
Matson? Are you in shipping, too?
Of a sort.
This is my wife, Miss Matson. You'll pardon me if I don't seem hospitable, but my brother was murdered this morning.
I know. I was sitting next to him when it happened.
You were?
Don't talk to her, Roger. I don't trust her. This whole thing is a threat of some kind.
No, it's not a threat. It's a business proposition. I'll come right to the point. You see, I'm a private detective.
Oh, one of those persons.
Put your nose back down, Mrs. Ellsworth. I want to get the show on the road. Yes, I'm a private detective, and I'm in a spot, too. The police think I'm connected with the case in some way, so I'm here for a double purpose.
I'm listening, Miss Matson.
Roger, I forbid you to speak with this woman.
Too late, Mrs. Ellsworth. Now, this is it. I'm in this business to make money. Give me a check now for $300, and I'll find out who killed your brother. And I'll also clear myself.
Roger, I'm warning you.
Naturally, you want to see the killer of your brother brought to justice, don't you, Mr. Ellsworth? Don't you?
Yes. Here, I'll make a check out right now.
Thank you. Just make it out to Candy Matson. Payable today. A lovely collection of guns you have, Mr. Ellsworth. You hunt much?
Oh, yes, yes. My wife and I are quite fond of shooting. She's an excellent shot. There you are.
I'll be in touch with you sometime tomorrow. Mr. Reed didn't say a word. She just stood there against the fireplace and shot sparks through me. After I waved the check in the air a few times to dry the ink, she showed me to the door.
Very clever, aren't you? taking advantage of a weak-willed man.
I wonder who made him that way.
Don't cash that check. I mean it.
Mrs. Ellsworth, $300. I need the money, badly. I need some new rolls for my player piano. I buzzed back downtown. I wanted to cash that check in a hurry. I knew of only one person who would give me the crisp green at that hour of the night. Uncle Charlie, the honest miller who ran the chase room. Uncle Charlie, in the strict sense of the word, was a gentleman. So with a tender little pat on my cheek, he cashed the check and I went up Telegraph Hill and home. All of a sudden, my eyes did a couple of inverted loops. Oh, my lights were on. Who's in here? All right, speak up.
Oh, Candy, the light of my life. Come join our party.
Oh, Rembrandt, you gave me a scare.
You don't scare easy either, Candy.
Come on, what gives?
That's my line, Candy. What gives? You're in on something, and I want to know about it.
Oh, Mellard, believe me, it's nothing. I'm just trying to parley a couple of hunches.
Tall hunches. Look at all those clippings on the South Sea Island Steamship Company. What are they for?
I meant to tell you, Candy, I had remarkable success down at the Chronicle. There's everything you want on that steamship line.
Oh, Rembrandt, did you have to tell the whole world?
Candy, you chide me unnecessarily. I merely had the clippings on the table when Hawkshaw here walks in on me.
Okay, Candy, take it from there.
I can't tell you yet, Mellard. Nothing makes sense yet. I've got about four loose ends that need tying off.
I'd only put two men to following you. I'd save myself a lot of grief.
2 days, that's all, Mellard. Just give me 2 days. I think I'll have it for you.
All right. 2 days. No more or less. I gotta go. Thanks for the fowl, chicken.
Ah, very gay. Here, Rembrandt, here's $50 for you.
50? My word. What's all this talk about a recession?
Go on and take it. Go someplace and stabilize the economy. I whipped through the old newspaper clippings. It was all there. Fire at sea on Ellsworth ship. Two seamen lost off Ellsworth ship near Honolulu. South Sea Island line ship loses rudder in storm. On and on it went over a period of 3 years. I threw the papers back on the table. Helped myself to some of Rembrandt's formula. Turned down the lights and went out on the porch. The bay was dark except for an occasional path of light from a passing freighter. I sat down to think and think. Then, click, click, just like that, two little tumblers in my mind fell into place. Only one thing to do, and that was to do it the hard way. The next morning, just as the ferry building siren was announcing 8 o'clock to downtown San Francisco, I got Rembrandt on the phone.
Candy, what on earth are you calling me for at this hour?
Can't help it. There's work to be done.
I did my work last night so extremely well that I'm just going to bed now.
Sorry, you'll just have to delay your sack time. Meet me at the corner of Mason and Union in 10 minutes, right where the cable car stops.
Now, what are we going to do?
We're going to take a cable car ride.
What? On one of those bouncing, jerky little contraptions? Not the way I feel this morning.
Oh, yes, you are. Union and Mason in 10 minutes. All right, Rembrandt, get on.
This is the silliest thing you've ever done, Candy.
Maybe. We'll see. Dwight Ellsworth was already on the car when I got on here. And alive.
How could you tell?
He mumbled something when I asked him to move over.
Sounds logical. Although I once remember stumbling into a corpse who mumbled for hours after it had been liquidated.
Rembrandt was in one of his rambling moods, so I let him alone. The car pulled over Mason Street, down Washington, and then swung on to Powell and up the hill. Now I watched the buildings and apartments carefully. There was a little red brick building, now a big apartment house, a woman's residence club, and so on. Then over the hill, more apartments, and the possibilities petered out at Bush. Well, only one thing to do. Canvass all those blocks between Washington and Bush. It was slow and tiresome, and the answers I got.
A tall gal dressed like Queen Victoria. Oh, sister!
That was about par.
Nope, nobody like that ever lived here.
Are you positive?
A dame who fits that description? Yeah, I'm positive.
The morning wore on, and so did we. We were over on the other side of California Street now, so we stopped and had a bite to eat. I had pickles with mine, and Rembrandt had olives on toothpicks in a glass. And again, we picked up the hunt. My heart was suddenly making with a rumba. There, just on the other side of Clay, in front of a three-story red brick house, was a police squad car. There was a little knot of people gathered around. Daintily lifting my crinoline, I did a Mel Patton down the block and up the front steps. I didn't have any trouble finding the room. The door was wide open, and there was a body on the floor. Four representatives of the law were buzzing back and forth. One of the buzzees was Mallard.
Well, my little ambassador of violence. Why is it you're always around the extremely dead, Candy?
I've got no time to brandy the ad libs, Mallard. Who is it?
I don't know yet. No identification.
Let me see.
A pen pal, maybe.
I was right. I knew it.
Knew it? Knew what?
You're right. He was a pen pal. He wrote me a check last night for $300. His name is Roger Ellsworth.
Very interesting. Must be open season on Ellsworth. Okay, Candy. Time you filled in the blanks. Start.
Wait a minute. I want to look at the window over here. Mallard, there are a couple of younger Ellsworths living around town here. I'm sure you'd like to see them stay healthy.
Yeah?
Get out to 25 Dashiell Road and pick up an old crone also named Ellsworth. 5 will get you 20. She's the one you're after.
All right. But you get back to your place and stay put, understand? I want to have a more illuminating chat with you.
Oh, Mallard, I'm just like putty in your hands. The moon was coming up over Diablo and spraying a path of silver on the bay. Still no Mallard. I wondered what could be wrong. Well, this was it. This was the showdown.
Have you seen a tall face with a horsey woman?
Oh, Rembrandt.
Candy, I'm so mad at you I could... what's the use?
Now what's the matter?
What's the matter, she says. I've been roving all over Powell Street ringing doorbells. Where did you go, you traitor?
Oh, Rembrandt, I'm sorry. And in the excitement, I forgot all about you.
What excitement?
There's been another murder.
In a moment, there's going to be another. I'm looking right at you, Candy.
Oh, cool off. Have some formula and stop snorting steam. What was that?
Your window, Candy. It just shattered.
What? Oh, wait a minute. That window didn't shatter by itself. Quick, get the lights, Rembrandt. Now duck down here.
What sort of a silly game are we playing now?
This isn't a game, believe me.
Candy! Candy, are you all right?
Yikes, it's the gumshoe.
Yes, I'm all right. Where are you, Mallard?
Over here. Two houses over. We've got your girlfriend trapped on the roof next to you. Don't move and stay covered.
Okay.
All right, Mrs. Ellsworth. Are you coming down peacefully, or do we have to play cops and robbers?
I'm not coming down until I get that Candy Matson. She did it. She forced me to kill my own brother-in-law.
Have it your own way. Okay, loosen her up a bit, boys.
Better than the 4th of July.
Keep your head down, Rembrandt.
Oh, is that what was up?
Ready to come down, Mrs. Ellsworth?
No, I'm not. That hateful woman. She's ruined my whole life. All my plans. Just because of her snooping and prying. She's going to die, I tell you.
It was a miracle, Candy. You must have moved slightly just as she shot at you.
Well, it was too close, I can tell you. She's dead?
Oh, decidedly. I think she was dead before she hit the ground. That one shot got her. We went out to her house, and she was just driving off when we got there. We trailed her up to North Beach, lost her for a block, and then spotted a car at the top of the hill here. We arrived just as she was getting on the roof next door. Okay, now you tell me your little dream.
Well, it was that ship docking that set my wheels going around. The name Ellsworth started burning in back somewhere. Mm-hmm. You saw the clippings we dug up.
Yeah.
The South Sea Island steamship lines were slowly being sabotaged. I did some checking, and I found that the insurance companies weren't going to renew.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't tie that in sooner.
Oh, it's just that you have too many things on your mind, Mallard, dear. I went out to the place on Dashiell Road, and when I left, I was pretty sure the old girl had knocked off her brother-in-law.
Why?
Well, for several reasons. One, she was a venomous old witch. Two, you've never seen such a collection of guns in all your life. And her husband admitted she was a darn good shot. I also saw one little pot gun that was very interesting. It had a silencer on it.
Uh-huh. That was the one she used on you tonight.
And also the one she used on Dwight Ellsworth from the window of that apartment where you found her husband.
How do you know?
Go back there. You'll see a nice little bullet hole in the curtain. with burned powder all around it.
Now, don't tell me that...
Yes, I'm telling you that she rented that place knowing that her brother-in-law always went downtown on a certain cable car. She waited that morning until we were riding by, and she plunked him.
I have now heard everything.
And the reason? Dwight Ellsworth, rather than fighting the insurance companies, had decided to sell his steamship line. But the old gal thought she'd beat him to the punch by knocking him off. The steamship company would then fall into her husband's hands.
Yeah. What about her husband?
Well, after he gave me the check and I left, they evidently had a fearful row and she spilled the beans. Somehow she lured him down to that place on Powell and gave him some lead poisoning, too. And that's all there is to it.
Candy, I wish you'd have told me all these things earlier. We might have been able to save the life of Roger Ellsworth.
No, it wouldn't do any good. Because if she hadn't killed him, I was going to.
What?
Mm-hmm. While I was waiting for you to get here, the phone rang. It was Uncle Charlie, the honest miller. That no-good Roger Ellsworth. His check bounced like a brand-new golf ball. What's so funny, Mallard?
Listen in again to the further adventures of Candy Matson, Girl Sucker.
Well, that's the way it goes. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. In this case, nobody did, except Rembrandt. He'd stocked his darkroom with $50 worth of formula, and not the kind you use on negatives, either. Let's see, murder on a cable car, Dwight and Roger Ellsworth done in as well as the old gal, one check that bounced. It really does sound fantastic, doesn't it? But I told you this was radio, didn't I? Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I did come out ahead at that. On the way out, Mallard leaned down and kissed me. The first time it ever happened. You know, at times, it's kind of fun to be in the arms of the law.
Listen again next week at the same time. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Candy Matson, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 7th, 1949 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of old-time radio mystery. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now, Sir John Gielgud and Sir Ralph Richardson star in one of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's least favorite stories in Sherlock Holmes. Reportedly, the first version of this story, The Case of the Solitary Cyclist, was rejected by its publisher, The Strand Magazine, because Sherlock wasn't heavily focused on or featured in that first draft of the story. Hear the second draft in sound next from February 27th, 1955 on NBC.
And now, the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Sometimes, as our friendship grew, Sherlock Holmes used to ask me to make certain investigations on his behalf. There was, I recall, the odd business of Miss Violet Smith, the charming bicyclist of Charlington. We first heard of her strange experience when she called on us one April day at Baker Street.
Ah, Miss Violet Smith, I presume. Yes. Do come in. I had your note just a moment ago saying you'd call.
Well, thank you, Mr. Holmes. This is your equally celebrated colleague, Dr. Watson, perhaps.
Oh, you flatter me, Miss Smith. Pray be seated. Could I offer you a little refreshment, a little ginger wine, perhaps? Some Madeira.
No, thank you, Doctor. You are very kind.
I fancy the problem is hardly in your line, Watson. So ardent a bicyclist as this lady has surely every likelihood of enjoying good health.
Well, Mr. Holmes, I've heard of your famous methods, of course, but how did you know that I...
We knew it from the roughening on the edge of your boot, Miss Smith, from the pedals.
Upon my soul, Watson, you'll be telling me next that you also knew Miss Smith was a pianist.
I'd thought a typewritist, Holmes. Oh. Do forgive me, Miss Smith. You mean from the fingertips, Holmes?
Yes, but there's a certain spirituality in your face, Miss Smith, which the typewriter would hardly inspire.
Well, gentlemen, you really are most intriguing, both of you.
You see,
I do teach music.
And in the country, I presume, from your charming complexion.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, near Farnham.
Oh, yes, that's a beautiful neighborhood, Miss Smith, full of the most delightful things, one of the most delightful parts of the world.
Quite delightful. The place where we took Archie Stamford, the forger, wasn't it, Watson?
Really, gentlemen, you fascinate me so much, I almost forget what I came for.
Ah, pray forgive us, Miss Smith. It's only our way. Now, regarding your note, is this matter serious?
Well, I hardly know, Mr. Holmes. It is certainly very strange.
Then we are all attention.
Well, you see, gentlemen, when my father died about 2 years ago, Mother and I were left very poor, so you can imagine how excited we were when we saw an advertisement in the papers one day asking for our whereabouts and saying that if we went to a certain solicitor, we would hear something to our advantage.
Indeed. And you did go?
Oh, yes. I went myself to the solicitor. Mother wasn't very well that day. Uh-huh. And there were two gentlemen there, a Mr. Carruthers, who was a clean-shaven man, and a Mr. Woodley, who'd a red moustache, and it seemed that they were both home on a visit from Australia. I didn't care for Mr. Woodley, but Mr. Carruthers was really quite nice. Of course, it was all a great mystery to me until Mr. Carruthers explained.
Well, it's like this, you see, Miss Smith. You knew, I take it, that your late father had a brother, Ralph.
Yes, Mr. Carruthers. But he went to Australia 25 years ago. I never met him.
Poor old Ralph. I'll bet he'd have enjoyed having a pretty niece like you, Miss Smith.
Woodley, please. Leave it to me.
Sure, sure, Bob. I wouldn't interfere for the world.
Now, Miss Smith, your Uncle Ralph was a great friend of ours. I regret to say that he died just a few months ago.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry, Mr. Carruthers.
I'm afraid it ain't what you think, my dear. Old Ralph didn't make no fortune to leave to you.
I had no such thought at all, Mr. Woodley.
A one in the eye for me, eh? All right, Bob, carry on.
Well, it's true, Miss Smith, as Mr. Woodley says, your uncle died a poor man. When he heard of your father's death, he begged us, because we'd been such close friends of his, to come to England and hunt you up, to see that you and your mother shouldn't be in any want as his only living relatives.
That was very kind of him, Mr. Carruthers.
Now, I'm a widower, Miss Smith, and I've a little girl of 10.
Yes.
I've taken a house called Chiltern Grange near Farnham while I'm in England. How would you like a job as governess and music teacher?
Oh, I
could offer £100 a year.
£100? But that's splendid pay, Mr. Carruthers.
It's for poor old Ralph's sake. But I'm sure that you'll be worth it, Miss Smith.
You bet she would. Well, what do you say, Miss Smith? Do you take the job? I reckon that you couldn't do much better.
So I thought it over, Mr. Holmes, and I took the job.
And all went well, Miss Smith?
Oh, at first, wonderfully, Dr. Watson. Mr. Carruthers was very nice, and the little girl was a dear. We used to have some charming musical evenings together.
Ah, yes, I'm sure you did, Miss Smith.
Then why have you come to consult us, Miss Smith?
Well, to begin with, there was Mr. Woodley. He came to Farnham on a visit, and he was quite dreadful. He tried to make love to me. I simply hated him.
Did Mr. Carruthers know?
Oh, yes. Mr. Woodley even proposed to me one day. He said that if I married him, I could have the finest diamonds in London. Imagine. And when I refused, he seized me in his arms. He was very strong.
A scoundrel.
And when I called for help, Mr. Carruthers came in and there was a fight. Oh, it was terrible, Dr. Watson.
Well, at least it was the end of Woodley's visits, I suppose.
Oh, yes. Mr. Carruthers was most upset. He sent Mr. Woodley away, and I haven't seen him since.
I should think not, indeed.
Now, my dear Miss Smith, pray continue.
It is all so strange, you see. It's the cyclist.
The cyclist?
Yes. When I went to Chiltern Grange, Mr. Carruthers said I could spend every weekend in London to see my mother. So every Saturday forenoon, I cycle into Farnham to get the 12:22. It's a very lonely road over Chollington Heath, you know.
Oh, yes, yes, I seem to remember it. Mainly woods, if I recollect.
Yes, on one side, and then there's one old house on the other, Charlington Hall. But that's the only one for miles and miles. Hardly ever meet anything, not so much as a cart. But one day...
Yes, Miss Smith?
Well, I happened to look back over my shoulder, Dr. Watson, and about 200 yards behind me, I saw a man also on a bicycle.
What did he look like?
Well, middle-aged, I'd say, and with a dark beard. I looked back again before I reached Farnham, but he'd gone by then, and I didn't think any more about it. But except that...
Except?
When I came back on Monday, I saw him again, on the same stretch of road, and then again the next Saturday, and the next Monday, too.
Aha!
Yes, the case certainly begins to present some features of interest, Watson, don't you think so?
Did he molest you in any way, Miss Smith?
No. He kept his exact distance, about 200 yards, I'd say, just at the point where the road passes Charlington Hall.
Who lives there, by the way? Do you happen to know, Miss Smith?
I'm afraid I don't.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned the matter to Mr. Carruthers, of course.
Oh, yes, and he seemed most interested. He said that he'd order a pony cart and groom so that in future I shouldn't have to pass over those lonely roads without some companion.
And you're sure you didn't know this man on the bicycle?
No, Dr. Watson. He was always just a little too far away for me to see him clearly, but I'm certain it wasn't anyone I knew. And then this very morning, I thought I'd set a trap for him. The pony cart was to have come this week, but it didn't arrive in time, so I had to cycle again. And there he was, as usual, following me. So I slowed down, and he slowed down, and I stopped altogether.
And he stopped.
Brilliant, my dear Watson.
And then I pedaled on again and laid my trap. There's a little side road through the woods at one point, so I turned into it very quickly. He couldn't have seen me because there's a bend in the road just there. I expected him to shoot past me so that I could have a closer glimpse of him.
But he didn't.
No, Mr. Holmes, he didn't. And when I came out again and looked back, there wasn't a sign of him across the whole heath.
Well, the matter has certainly some unique features. Don't you think so, Watson?
It's certainly somewhat singular, Holmes. I take it, Miss Smith, that you've no, secret admirers, perhaps?
Well, hardly secret, Dr. Watson. There's Cyril.
Cyril?
Cyril Watson, of course.
Oh, of course. Yes, I knew there must be someone, Miss Smith. A most attractive lady, if I may say so.
Cyril Morton, Mr. Holmes. He is an electrical engineer at Coventry. We expect to be married at the end of the summer.
It couldn't have been him that was paying you any kind of surprise visit.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, as if I shouldn't recognize him.
Well, can't you think of anyone else? It might have been Miss Smith. Some other admirer, perhaps?
Well, this dreadful man Woodley, if you can call him an admirer.
Well?
Well, perhaps it's only a fancy, Mr. Holmes. But it sometimes seems that Mr. Carruthers takes an interest in me. We are rather thrown together, you see. I play his accompaniments in the evenings. He sings quite well.
He's never actually said anything.
Oh, no, Doctor. He's a perfect gentleman. It's just that a girl always knows.
Does she? I mean, yes, of course.
Yeah. Quite, Watson, quite. Well, Miss Smith, your case certainly provides several points of interest. I shall be most pleased to look into it.
Thank you, sir.
I am sure will Dr. Watson.
Yes, yes, indeed, indeed.
Take no further steps without letting us know. Keep in touch, Miss Smith. Meanwhile, spend your usual weekend with your mother and return on Monday to Farnham, and we shall do our best to help you.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Thank you both, gentlemen. You've been very kind and patient.
Oh, not at all, not at all. Oh, permit me, Miss Smith, your glove. Oh,
thank you, Dr. Watson. Then I will say goodbye, Mr. Holmes, and I will let you know if anything further happens.
Yes, pray do. Good day, Miss Smith.
Good day, good day, good day, my girl. Well, Holmes, well.
Well, indeed, my dear fellow.
Well, it's part of the settled order of nature, I suppose, that such a girl should have admirers, Holmes,
surely.
But not following her on bicycles on lonely country roads.
Yes, there are certainly some curious and suggestive details about the case. I think our first effort should be directed towards the tenants of this Charlington Hall, the house that the girl was passing when that strange cyclist disappeared.
Yes, but how do you account for the odd acquaintanceship between Carruthers and Woodley? Such very different types and manners.
You forestall me, Watson. As so often in this case, I suppose it must be the feminine interest in it.
Come, Holmes, now.
Last and most important point, what kind of a menage is it that pays double the market price for a governess and yet doesn't keep a horse and carriage, although this house, Chiltern Grange, is several miles away from the station? Odd. Very odd.
So you'll go down there?
No, my dear fellow, you will.
I will?
Well, you know quite well I'm busily engaged with my new violin sonata. It may be only some trifling intrigue after all. This case is just in your line, Watson. I leave it all to you.
Accordingly, I made my way down to Charlington Heath on the following Monday and concealed myself behind a clump of gorse. In the distance, I saw Miss Smith gracefully speeding along the road from Farnham Station. And a moment later, the black-bearded pursuer had emerged from a gap in the hedge some 100 yards away from me and went cycling after her, looking curiously furtive. She slowed down, he slowed also. She stopped, he stopped. But she was a spirited girl, our Miss Smith, and this time she suddenly turned round and darted straight towards him. Yet he was as quick as she was. He turned his machine and pedaled off. Then she turned again, with her head in the air, very haughtily, and so made off for Chiltern Grange. And as for him...
Well, Watson, as for him, the man with the black beard.
Why, he came cycling by a few minutes later, Holmes. Well, he went right past me, and then he turned in at the hall gates, got off his bicycle to adjust his necktie or something.
Oh?
And then he jumped on his cycle again, pedaled away from me up the drive.
And that was that, eh?
Yes, Holmes. Well, I was really quite worn out, one thing and another.
I'm sure you must have been, my dear fellow. Here, sit on the sofa and put your feet up. Shall I ring for some hot milk?
Oh, upon my soul, Holmes, you're quite insufferable. There I was, doing my best for you.
Exactly, while Miss Smith was on her way to Chiltern Grange, where Mr. Carruthers proposed to her last evening after dinner.
What? Good heavens, Holmes. How did you learn that?
Oh, quite simple, my dear fellow. There was a letter from her this morning. Our young friend seems to be getting into deep waters, eh? However, Watson, to return to your own exhausting exploits... Oh, let me hand you this cushion, my dear fellow. You haven't finished yet. I'm sure you made some inquiries, didn't you, in the neighbourhood, as to who was living in this mysterious old house, Charlington Hall?
Yes, I did. I went to the local house agent, and it was let some weeks ago.
Oh, to whom?
A man called Williamson, Cedric Williamson. An elderly retired clergyman, according to the locals in the public house.
Good, Watson. I was rather afraid you wouldn't have the sense to go to the pub. That's always the centre of country gossip.
Thank you, Holmes. I also happened to be thirsty after my day in the open.
I'm sure you were. Well, what else did you learn? If this Williamson is an elderly man, he can hardly be the energetic cyclist.
Ah, I don't suppose he was for the moment. He's a long white beard and a gammy leg.
Oh, and that settles that.
Mm. But it seems that there are doings at the hall most weekends.
Doings?
Yes, wild visitors and so forth.
Oh.
What the landlord calls a warm lotzer.
So you think the mysterious cyclist might be one of those?
He might, because it seems that among them, Holmes, and the warmest of the lot, is a fellow with a red moustache called Woodley.
Oh, Miss Smith's fiery suitor. But a red moustache, Watson, yet the cyclist has a black beard.
Aha, but it could be assumed, Holmes.
So it could. Yes, we shall be hearing from Miss Violet Smith again, my dear fellow. You may be sure of that.
Chiltern Grange, Thursday, April the 28th. Dear Mr. Holmes, you will not be surprised to hear that I am leaving Mr. Carruthers' employment. Even the high pay cannot reconcile me to the discomforts of my situation. On Saturday, I come to London and do not intend to return. Mr. Carruthers has got the pony trap, which will be driven by an ostler, and so the dangers of the lonely road are now over. As to the cause of my leaving, it is not only the strained situation with Mr. Carruthers himself, but the reappearance of that odious Mr. Woodley. I saw him out of the window, but am glad to say I did not meet him. He had a long talk with Mr. Carruthers, and I think that they were quarreling. He seems to be living somewhere in the neighborhood, and I confess that I would sooner have a wild animal about the place. From his inflamed appearance, I am quite sure that he drinks heavily. I will not feel myself safe from him until Saturday, when I leave here forever, and all my troubles will be over. Yours sincerely, and with regards to Dr. Watson, Violet Smith.
You hear? She sends her regards to you, Watson.
Ah, thank you. Well, that's the end of that, I suppose.
Not at all, Watson. I believe there will soon be further developments. There's some deep intrigue going on around that young woman. I have a curious feeling.
Hmm?
Yes, I think it's all rather more sinister than I imagined at first. I've been checking on the Reverend Cedric Williamson.
The old clergyman at the hall, eh?
He was a clergyman once. I made some inquiries at a clerical agency, and the only man who fits the name and the description has had a singularly dark career.
I confess his conduct struck me as somewhat unecclesiastical, with his wild parties and so forth.
Yes, I must say that I'm considerably alarmed.
What do you mean?
I think that you and I should spare the time to run down to Farnham together, Watson, tomorrow, Saturday morning, if you're free. You've still got that old army revolver of yours.
Of course.
Then take it, Watson, take it. You never know. You simply never know.
A rainy night had been followed by a glorious morning as we walked across the heath towards Charlington Hall. It seemed impossible that any menace could threaten on such a day. Yet, as we followed the winding road among the gorse where I had hidden myself earlier in the week, my nerves grew somewhat strained, and I found myself fingering the pistol in my pocket. Holmes strolled in front of me, his head in the air, covering the ground remarkably rapidly with his long, springy step. He looked a strange figure, striding through the gorse in his famous deerstalker cap and travelling cape. And then, suddenly...
What a look! Heavens above, I'm afraid we're too late.
What is it, Holmes? In heaven's name.
Why, look, the pony trap! It's empty! And stop the horses. Stop the horse!
Whoa there, whoa, whoa, you brute.
Here, get hold of the reins, Watson. Stop him, for heaven's sake!
Watch the fool! Whoa there, whoa!
Ah! Oh, I've got him. I've got him. Quiet, quiet, my beauty. There. There, that's better.
He's all right, Holmes. Only nervous. What's happened?
Oh, what a fool I've been, Watson. I should have allowed for her taking an earlier train.
What happened to Miss Smith? Where's the groom?
They've abducted her, Watson. Why, it may be murder. Heaven knows what. Pray God we may not be too late. What a fool I am.
Holmes, look. The cyclist.
Yes, Blackbeard. Coming towards us, peddling like the deuce.
Hold there. Stop. What are you doing with that dog cart? I'll put a bullet in your horse.
Don't be such a fool, man. Where's Miss Smith?
That's what I'm asking you. You're in her dog cart.
We found it empty. Quick, man, they must have got her.
Woodley and that blackguard parson. By the living jingo, I'll never forgive myself.
Look, Holmes, they must have gone this way. Through the hedge. Through the hedge there. Let's run for it. Holmes, wait. Someone's lying by the tree.
Good heavens.
Peter! It's Peter, the groom. He was driving the pony cart. The scoundrels have killed him.
No, no, no. It's only a flesh wound. He's only stunned. He'll be all right.
Leave him for the moment, then. He'll come to no harm. Come, this way. Quickly, round the bushes here.
There's a clearing beyond. They might have... Miss Smith!
Quickly, quickly, through here.
Too late. There they are by the oak tree. The girl's fainting.
The clergyman, in his surplice, Holmes.
He's marrying them, Watson, Woodley and the girl there.
You can take your beard off, Bob Carruthers. I know you.
You scoundrel, Woodley.
Old Williamson's done it, Bob. Prayer book and all.
Always at your service, Mr. Carruthers. Alfresco weddings arranged at short notice. Funerals.
Shut up, you blackguard. Woodley, I'll see this woman righted if I have to swing for it. I told you what I'd do if you molested her, and by the Lord, I'll be as good as my word.
You're too late, Bob. She's my wife.
No, she's your widow.
Brothers, drop that gun. Keep away, Watson. Keep him covered.
Yes.
Who are you to order us about?
Hmm?
My name is Sherlock Holmes.
What?
Take that surplice off. You disgrace the cloth, sir. Carruthers, give me a hand with Woodley to the house. Watson, you look after Miss Smith, I'm sure.
Dr. Watson. Oh, dear Dr. Watson.
There, there, my dear, there, there. It's all right, it's all right, it's all right.
Well, now, Watson, what have you to report, eh?
Miss Smith's resting in the drawing room. She'll be all right, Holmes.
And Woodley?
He'll live.
Ah, good.
The bullet got him in the shoulder.
Confound it, I'll go upstairs and finish him first. Do you tell me the girl's going to be tied to Jack Woodley for life?
Keep quiet, Carruthers. Now, as for you, Williamson...
Blasted, interfering, busybody.
Just so. You can tell the police that when they arrive.
I confess... I'm still a bit confused, Holmes.
Yes, then I'll tell you the whole story. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Carruthers.
I don't care a farthing if you're wrong or not. It's Miss Smith that's my concern.
Don't worry, Carruthers. Miss Smith will be quite all right. Mr. Williamson here has no right to perform a marriage ceremony.
I've been ordained.
And also unfrocked.
Once a clergyman, always a clergyman.
I think not. How about the license?
We got one.
Then you got it by a trick. In any case, a forced marriage isn't a marriage at all, but a very serious felony. Mm. You'll have 10 years to think that out, you old rascal.
Ah.
As for you, Carruthers, you'd have done much better to have kept your pistol in your pocket.
No, I'm beginning to think so. By the living jingo, though, when I think of all the precautions I took to shield her...
Exactly. You followed her on your bicycle, wearing a false beard, every time she passed this house.
Well, confound it, I knew these scoundrels were lurking here. I didn't know what they'd get up to. I had to protect her. I fell in love with them. I never meant to, but I did, heaven help me.
You could have told her of the danger?
She'd have left. And I couldn't bear that.
Sounds more like selfishness to me than love. I still don't understand it, Holmes. What happened?
Simply that Miss Smith's uncle didn't die when these scoundrels said he had Watson. And he wasn't a poor man either, Carruthers, was he? So you came over post-haste, and the idea was that one of you should marry her and the other have a share in the plunder. For some reason or other, Woodley was the one chosen.
We played cards for her on the voyage, and he won.
Upon my soul.
Oh, I wish I'd never got tied up with him.
But at least you got her to enter your service... And then I suppose Woodley was to do the courting. Only the trouble was that the girl recognized him for the drunken brute he was and wouldn't have anything to do with him.
I see it all, Holmes. And meanwhile, Carruthers had fallen in love with her himself and couldn't bear the thought of Woodley owning her.
By George, I couldn't. We quarreled, you see, and he took this house and picked up with his padre here. Then he came to me one night this week with a cable. Old Ralph Smith was dead at last. I proposed to her as a last hope, and she wouldn't have me. And Woodley took the whole thing into his own hands. You know the rest.
I should have known it long ago, the minute you told me, Watson, that you'd seen the solitary cyclist adjusting his necktie. Of course he was really taking off the beard he wore to keep Miss Smith from recognizing him. But I perceive three members of the country constabulary coming up the drive, so our task here is really over, Watson. And if Miss Smith has recovered from her indisposition, it only remains for us to return to Baker Street.
I'll see to her at once, Holmes.
Oh, and Watson, by the way, if she imagines that she's still feeling rather weak, perhaps a hint that we are about to telegraph a certain young electrician in Coventry would complete the cure.
Eh? Oh, Cyril. Quite so, Holmes. Quite so. And so ended the case of the solitary cyclist. Williamson and Woodley were both tried for abduction, the former getting 7 years and the latter 10. Carruthers got no more than a few months. The shooting of Woodley was viewed with leniency. He came out of prison a wiser and a better man. As to Miss Smith herself, I have a note in my records that she did indeed inherit a large fortune and became the wife of Cyril Morton. I had the pleasure of attending her wedding. But, in an experience of the ladies, extending over five nations, and...
Watson, Watson, my poor, dear, susceptible Watson.
Oh, confound you, Holmes, confound you.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the original stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, have been dramatized anew with original music composed by Sidney Torch.
Sherlock Holmes, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 27th, 1955 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.